I appreciate everyone here with me today. We got a great show for you. I'll be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar here in a moment. I've got even more news for you on the Russia-Ukraine front that I may get into on the third hour. I'm hearing maybe from Fishback, maybe he can't make it. I'm going to be optimistic and still say we're going to do that third hour interview. But if I don't get to that, we will take y'all's calls and, of course, cover the entire rundown. I mean, I got a giant stack here. This is all clips, right? This entire thing is clips. I do a daily morning show 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. New American Journal. Y'all might want to tune into that. I'm always live on my X, whether that's New American Journal in the morning or Gray Area at night, right? And I have this massive rundown. And I'm talking to Austin, my producer, and I'm like, Austin, I need a little bit more for the war room. And he's like, okay. And he gives me like four more pages. So I'm just kind of looking through what we got here. Let's just go ahead and do this really quick while we wait for Anthony to join us, probably at the start of the next segment after the 1 minute break. Just go ahead and play clip number two, Trump talking about Spain.
I didn't speak to Spain. Spain is a wasted cause. We don't want to do any trade business with Spain anymore, by the way. I'd like you to cut it out. Spain is a terrible partner in NATO.
Pause it. Okay, so this is like Trump's personal cuckold. Literally, go back to him. Mark Root. He calls Trump daddy. Okay, this is not an exaggeration. He is an openly gay man. All right, I'm not slandering him. There's no shade, not whatever. But he is in love with Donald Trump. He is the NATO defense secretary. Okay, this is how you get this game of madness and delusion in the game theory I talked about in the first hour, the first segment, right? This is how you get down that road of true unpredictability, right? We have lunatics running the asylum. So when you have the NATO defense secretary sitting there watching Trump talk trash and just like it's a board meeting or something, issuing a command to somebody behind the camera, some dignitary or diplomat walking around or somebody that works for the White House, that we're just going to, you know, cut off all trade with Spain immediately, right now. Yeah, look at this. He's in love with him. He wants to, you know, fondle his ding-dong, all of that stuff. And it's really disgusting that we have an entire world based off that. We have Keir Starmer. We have Mertz. We have Macron. And that iconic video, of course, of that cocaine-like substance that was in the napkin or whatever. Not saying it was coke, just me speculating. It's a bit weird when you hide a napkin with white powder in it. Right. That's who these people are. They're dysgenic degenerates. And those are the only people Trump is strong enough to rule over anymore. Look at that right now. We got this. Look at this. Look at these scumbags. Look at this. They're presiding over the destruction of the West, the displacement of the native population of Europeans, third world migrants coming in, wars coming in, nuclear expansion, proliferation coming in. They preside over all of it. OK, look at that. Look at that white thing. Oh, got to hide that. What's up with that, Mr. Macron? I got to say, people in the audience, they won't like me saying this, but, you know, I've been there. You know, that's tough. That's tough, man. That's difficult. So expensive. It's like $100 a gram. So he did a good job of concealing it, right? He did a good job, but we know who these people are, and they shouldn't be running these countries, okay? So Trump likes to lord over them. Trump likes to rule, cut off aid to Spain. Those channels I told you about, I'll give you an example, like Glenn Deason and other people that I've heard do interviews on this and Dialogue Works, of course, Judge Knapp. The people, the old heads from the 20th century that do all these interviews all the time, they're appalled. They look at something like this as like the destruction of our like old world order, basically, and the ushering in of the new world order, the one based off true chaos and just discord 24/7. And I got to say, as a layperson, it's kind of like that IQ graph meme, right, where you have the dumb. They believe the same thing. The midwit believes in like bullshiza, I shall say. And then the super genius believes in the same thing as the idiot, right? Because it's just horseshoe theory, right? And it kind of circles around. That's how you can kind of think of it. There's a lot of, you know, 100 IQ mastermind stuff going on right now, and it's a big problem, okay? And real people that are intelligent, I think the guy that holds the world record for it, he like lives out in the middle of the woods. What's going on? Oh, I'm at a break now. All right, I'll see you guys with Anthony Aguilar's serious geopolitics interview coming up. Latest coverage on the Iran war, mystery airstrikes, dead MOU, intelligence, Israel, assassination attempt, you name it. We'll be right back. See you on the other side.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95-plus percent lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of the AlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShipStore.com.
Appreciate everyone that's here today. Wish we had better news. You know, every time I interview one of these distinguished gentlemen, you know, that's been to war, that's experienced the chaos and, you know, destruction of it all, I want to hear from them that it's going to be over. But sadly, what it looks like is, you know, the escalation is going to continue. I'm having Anthony Aguilar, distinguished man, geopolitical analyst, leading one, in fact, running for Congress as well in North Carolina. Please do support him. And he's out there speaking truth to power about all this stuff is because he's a Green Beret, 8 combat deployments. He's been over there. He understands the reality of warfare. But really quick, before he joins us, I want to play another clip. That's going to be clip 1, Myron pleading people to leave the Gulf states. Because Myron also has real world experience. He worked for the government. Let's go ahead and play this.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, bro. If I was in the Gulf states, I'd be leaving right now. Yo, anybody that's watching, dude, and if you live in Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, the UAE, Oman, Saudi Arabia, any of you guys watching from the Gulf, I'm dead ass. I'm not even trying to be hyperbolic. I would leave. I would genuinely leave. And even if nothing happens, it doesn't matter. At least you didn't take a chance. I would get on a flight now and leave, dude. Book a one-way, get out.
Imagine having the inability to leave. Imagine being the residents of these actual countries, or even worse, the immigrant workers, like the people, you know, Dubai has no sewage. Like, or they have no sewers, right? So, like, giant trucks have to come every day, and, like, they dump giant, like, caravans of you know, human excrement in the desert, right? How do those people feel about regional instability? Like, what is going to happen to this region? It's such a hornet's nest of various factors that can interact with each other in such horrible ways. I mean, look at Lebanon, look at Syria, look what's happening there. Look at Israel, Greater Israel Project. Look at even Iran, its territorial ambitions, right? Like there's a variety of factors. You can put Saudi Arabia, of course, you can point to UAE committing genocide, Saudi Arabia committing genocide with our weapons. Any of it and all of it. Are we still having issues, guys? Not connected just yet. Okay, let's go ahead and play another clip. And I really agree with this because it is totalitarian. Let's go to clip 3 with Tucker Carlson.
I think it's very good, in fact, necessary to force leaders to do what they say they're going to do. Otherwise, come on, dude, we're moving toward one of two endpoints. One is a totalitarian society where you just don't have the option of disagreeing. You have to obey because you've got programmable digital currency and universal surveillance, and you just have to do what they say or they'll starve you to death.
It's not going to work here.
I hope it. I pray it doesn't.
It's not going to work.
Or we're going to have a revolution. It's one of the two. We're getting totalitarian government or revolution.
It's going to work for a little bit, and then it's not going to work.
I pray you're right. I'm a gold buyer on that basis, an ammo buyer. But again, I have no track record of seeing the future, but I'm convinced that the current course.
All right, take us out of the clip.
Because.
All right, I've got Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar joining me now. Really grateful for your time, man. As always, I see you doing the shows, spreading the real news, real information. Grateful that you can spend the time on the War Room Live on the AJN Network. Got a big audience here. I wanted to run through these three massive stories with you. Of course, Trump declaring the MOU as dead, the mystery attacks, the airstrikes that were launched at Iran. And then, of course, the new intelligence about the assassination attempt. So, Anthony Aguilar, with all that being said, what's on your mind? How are you doing?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of news coming out of the region with the conflict, with the renewal of strikes, the seemingly mystery nation of who conducted strikes tonight, just as, you know, within a few hours ago. And the Israeli intelligence of Iran attempting to assassinate the president. So,
right.
You know, when you look at it in terms of the context, it seems like Israel is attempting either a false flag or the pretense to drawing the United States into deeper conflict with Iran.
Yes. And I think that's what a lot of people have been saying from day one. And the reality is that we're finally kind of circling the toilet bowl, I would say, and we're going into the darkness, into the tunnel. I would just say, what do you want the American people to know about the off-ramps, the various off-ramps that have been available throughout this process?
Well, you know, we're from the 28th of February, we're at day 132.
Right.
We had 62 days of epic fury, you know, really, really at the 60-day mark, because on the day that we started strikes on the 28th of February, the president kind of gets a 48-hour leeway in terms of, are we really at war or not? And right. then 60 days beyond that to determine if we're going to stay, and then war powers. So on the 62nd day, he submits a memorandum that says we're no longer doing Operation Epic Fury. We went into about a 24-hour period of Operation Project Freedom, which was the attempt to blockade slash escort through the strait. Multiple Gulf nations said, no, don't do that. So we didn't. And now we've kind of been over the last 69 days in this continuous vicious cycle of pretend peace talks, strikes, peace talks, strikes, peace talks, strikes.
Right.
And then the latest of the falling apart of the peace talks in, you know, on or about the 4th of July, 5th of July.
Well, can I stop you there? Hostilities. Can I stop you there for a second? I just played a bunch of clips in the first hour of Trump saying, oh, like they want to negotiate, they want to negotiate, they want to negotiate. People here that may be kind of like unaware of the reality, the facts on the ground, they've tried to negotiate. We bomb during negotiations. We negotiate with bombs. That's a Pete Hegseth quote. So
it is a Pete Hegseth quote. And unfortunately, that is not the way that the United States should act in diplomacy and bringing a conflict to an end. And I will say this, and you know, I will say this firmly, that no conflict in the history of the world has ever ended in conflict. All conflicts, world wars, regional wars, intrastate war, interstate war, global war, comes to an end with some type of an agreement, a treaty, an understanding, an armistice. I mean, one of the longest running wars that to where we've never had a treaty where it's just simply an armistice is with North Korea and South Korea.
Right.
But even in that case, we have an armistice in place. So this bombing or negotiation through bombing is not. It sounds good on a soundbite if you're trying to sound like a saber rattling narcissistic warmonger,
right?
But it doesn't equal reality, and we're seeing that now to where what really has me concerned. What we saw over the last few hours is this seemingly mystery as to what nation responded. I'm quite certain it was the UAE vis-a-vis Israel.
Right. The attack dog. That's interesting. Go into
that's
that.
Right. Well, because we know that when you look at the normalization of relations within the region, specifically between Iran and the Gulf Coast nations, Kuwait is pretty much in the middle of it because the United States has bases there. Kuwait does not want to escalate. Kuwait doesn't really have the means to where if it was going to get involved to protect itself organically. So it would rely on the United States. And really, you know, it's caught in the middle. Bahrain caught in the middle. Oman is moving towards normalization and trying to stay on the good side of Iran because of the Strait of Hormuz.
Well,
but then when you look at the UAE, the UAE has very much become a statelet of Israel as a statelet of the United States, now embroiled in this manipulation.
Human centipede.
Human centipede. Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. So why I think it was the UAE is because of all the nations in the region. Saudi Arabia has a U.S. base where we are building up quite a bit at the air base in Saudi Arabia. However, we know that these strikes didn't come from Saudi Arabia. Jordan. We're building up a lot in Jordan, but these strikes didn't come from Jordan. These strikes came somewhere from within the IAAD, the Air Defense Air Interdiction umbrella, to where it's unclear, well, it was the United States or someone else, but the United States through U.S. Central Command has said, well, it wasn't us, we stopped. So who fired them? If you look at where they were fired, so let's look at the target of tonight's strikes of these, where did they come from? It was the Bushehr nuclear power plant, and Bushehr is right here.
There we go. There we go, the map.
So Bushehr is right here at the, you know, here's the infamous Karg Island.
Right.
Here's Bushehr. So if you look at that in terms of the distance, it's a prime target for the UAE to hit without having to use as exquisite radar capability. So if you look right there on the map, basically, if you take a straight east shot from Kuwait City, you see Bandar Bushehr. That's Bushehr. So the nuclear power plant. But Bushehr also supports all oil operations on Karg Island. So basically consider Karg Island a place of work where right. Everybody goes to work every day, but they go back and forth between Bushehr. So what we know that the UAE has at its capacity that other nations don't necessarily have, because the explosions and the damage of what we've seen specifically tonight at Bushehr looks a lot like what we would have seen from a U.S. strike in terms of the right. BDA or the battle damage assessment. So does the UAE therefore have anything that would be a U.S. munition? And they absolutely do. The UAE has the ATACMS, the Army Tactical Missile, which is fired from the multi-launch rocket system. It's a very capable missile. It was one that when the United States basically said, we're going to offer the ATACMS to Ukraine.
Right.
Russia said, well, that's a red line. It's a very capable missile system, and the UAE has it. The UAE also has, here's where you look at the kind of the understanding of the confusion of what missile came from where. The UAE also has the Scalp EG, which is a Shahid variant of the Shahid missile system, which they basically took Iranian technology, made it their own. And it looks a lot like, and it acts a lot like, and it looks a lot like on radar, like the Iranian Shahid. And theirs is called the Scalp EG, or the Black Shahid is what they call it, because they stole the technology and then made it probably
reverse
through the
engineer.
CIA.
Yeah.
That's gotcha. Right. And then they also have the Russian Pantyr S-1 rapid response missile. It probably wasn't that, because that is more of a defense umbrella interceptor. So I'm thinking that it was probably a U.S. ATACMS that was fired from the UAE by the UAE with a Mossad agent or an IDF agent sitting somewhere in there, you know, basically holding the arm of the guy who's pushing the button. So you could say that the UAE did it.
Let me ask you this. Is this just another one of the, as they say, I hate this language when they say tit for tat, because it's not that, it's brutal strike for brutal strike. And that's the real reality. Is it that, or is this staging for, you know, an island invasion? Are they going to try to take Karg Island? What do you think?
So I agree with you. I don't like the term tit for tat, because it minimizes the reality of what we're talking about here of war. We're talking about two nation states, the United States and Iran, launching tactical and ballistic missiles at each other. This is not a cross-border skirmish or a little dust up between a Kurdish Peshmerga and Iranian force on the border. This is not a tit for tat. This is war.
Yes.
So looking at what is now going to happen from this, I think based on everything we've seen leading up to this. So in the preceding days, the United States did not withdraw forces from the region. We actually increased. And
wow.
One of those increases was in addition to the aircraft carrier strike groups, of which two we have, the Bush and the Ford, that are in the Arabian Sea and the Indian Ocean, we've additionally sent the USS Boxer, which is a WASP class lightning carrier. So if you look at it and you look at a picture of the USS Boxer, you're like, that's an aircraft carrier. Flat top, it's got F-35s, helicopters, it looks like an aircraft carrier. It is an aircraft carrier, but it's specially designed for amphibious assault to support an amphibious assault response group of the U.S. Marine Corps. That's it right there. So you look at that and you're like, well, that's an aircraft carrier. True. That aircraft carrier is specifically designed to support the amphibious response group of the United States Marine Corps. What is also sailed with that, in addition to the USS Boxer, and keep in mind, we also already have the USS Tripoli
right
in the Gulf of Oman. So now we have two U.S. Navy carrier strike groups out of the 5th Navy Fleet, U.S. Central Command. We have the additional Marine forces that were sent earlier that have never, that haven't come home yet, the 31st Marine Expeditionary Unit.
Wow.
And now we have two deployments of Marine Amphibious Response Groups, the 5th and the 8th, aboard the USS Tripoli and the USS Boxer. So when you look at all those assets, the USS Boxer and the USS Tripoli aren't designed to sit out in the Gulf and do extended operations. They are designed to support amphibious assault. In addition to the USS Boxer, the U.S. also deployed the logistics support vessel with that, which means you deploy Marines, amphibious assault, ship to shore, take the island. Once a beachhead is secured, you then bring in this logistics support vehicle that acts as a port temporarily to bring in massive amounts of supplies to expand your beachhead. So think Normandy, think Iwo Jima.
No, if we could do Iwo Jima, we could do this.
World War II.
If we could do Iwo Jima, we could do this. How disgusting is that? Think about that. Now we're there.
So this is, well, I mean, we've heard Lindsey Graham say that, right?
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham has said it all the time. But when you look at what's the key here? So the United States had an MOU, an agreement that the president of the United States signed, that the Iranian leadership signed, that we were discussing. For lack of better terms, let's just call that the treaty or the framework of the treaty to end this war.
Right.
And that was on the table.
Right.
In coming to the table, the U.S. president violated the very first article by saying that he was going to kill the negotiators before they even got home on day one of negotiations.
Yep.
And we can't even get through Article 1 of the 14-point Memorandum of Misunderstanding because of Israeli forces in Lebanon. That's Article 1.
Yes.
We can't even get through that. And then the United States tried to blame Iran, saying, oh, no, it's not about Lebanon. We're not even there yet. It's about the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah,
so we went into go ahead.
No, we're in direct violation of Article 1 and then Article 5, right? Paragraph 5, right? Iran controls traffic.
Well, not only were we, so Article 5 of the MOU doesn't say that Iran will immediately give up all administrative action or control of the Strait of Hormuz. What it says is that within the first 30 days,
right,
that Iran and the Sultanate of Oman will emplace measures to ensure the safe passage of vessels through the strait back to pre-war traffic volume.
Right.
And they did that. We saw that immediately started to happen. The United States then came in and said, well, you know, we don't want you to have any type of control over it. So that's what we meant. That's why I call this the Memorandum of Misunderstanding. And I don't think it's misunderstanding because it's not clear. It's misunderstanding because that ambiguity was baked into it from the beginning to give the United States pretense to go back to war, because
Absolutely.
It was an MOU that the United States never intended to meet, but wanted to use the peace dividend of time and space to refit naval forces, build up munitions, give Israel a breather to expand in Lebanon to make it even harder to leave now. Well, the United States says, hey, you know, the Lebanon question, that's going to take a while. Let's just shelve that for now.
Right.
And Iran is not going to budge. So what now? The United States, we are back at war with Iran. The president of the United States, the commander in chief, the chief representative of the United States in all foreign policy and matters abroad has said the MOU is out the window. Peace deal's done. We're back at war. Okay. So what then changes to bring Iran and the United States back to the negotiating table until something strategically on the table of negotiation changes? That's either conditions on Israel in Lebanon, meaning the U.S. says, well, that they get to stay, so you're not going to hold us against that, or control of the Strait of Hormuz. So what I think the United States is attempting to do is that the United States will not confront Israel on Lebanon. We know that because we're trying to do a side deal between Marco Rubio to allow Israel to stay in Lebanon. So we've already signaled to the world and to Iran that the United States is unwilling to restrain or keep Israel out of Lebanon. So how does the United States then change the leverage at the table? Well, the United States then has to have the Strait of Hormuz because that's what Iran has. It right. gives them the leverage to demand Article 1, which is forces leave Lebanon. So I think the United States is using this to change the calculus of the Strait of Hormuz. And the only way to do that, you can bomb all you want. It doesn't change until you actually, the Strait of Hormuz is Iran. What makes that waterway a strait, a passage between the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman, is the fact that Iran as a nation in a geographical landmass exists. So you don't change it by just bombing. You have to change the control. So I think the United States is going to attempt to conduct operations directly in the strait to seize control. And I don't mean permanently. When I say this, right. people say, oh, my God, the United States would never do that. We couldn't do it, this and that. In military operations, to seize or control doesn't necessarily mean you're bringing in tens and thousands of ground troops. It could be through amphibious forces, air forces, targeting, and then maintaining control during a specific period of time to then come back to Iran and say, hey, we've got it now. It's ours now, not yours. Are you going to come back to the table? And I think that's what the United States is attempting to do. And I think that Karg Island is a part of that as a hostage.
Right.
If the United States can take Bashir, hold Karg Island hostage, meaning we're not going to blow up Karg Island. If we blew up Karg Island, we would get Russia and China directly involved. That is a red line.
They want to hold it ransom.
So, exactly. So if we hold Karg Island ransom to then use that as leverage against the Strait of Hormuz, we now change the calculus to then come back to the negotiating table. That is what I think the United States is going toward. I don't think that it's going to be successful. I think that we're going to find ourselves in weeks or months from now trying to then figure out how do we negotiate ourselves out of this again. So back to your baseline question, what off-ramps were there? Well, we had multiple off-ramps. We had an off-ramp on the 27th of February where we could have just avoided getting on the highway to hell with Israel
right.
Down this path. And then the first exit after the first lull to say, okay, let's relook at this. We blew past that exit. And then the MOU was a great opportunity, you know, right. a big old exit on I-95, pull over at the truck stop. Let's figure out, let's look at the map and figure out where we're going on this road trip to insanity. And we said, nope. And we blew right past that. So now we don't have an exit strategy.
Really quick, stay with me. We're coming up on a break here. This is the reason why I like my home shows, because I stream live for 3 hours. We're coming up on a network break. I'll be right back with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar running for Congress. Go to his website now. Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar joins me in the next segment. I'll see you all on AJN Live.
Fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks, you've seen the deplatforming, you've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Serious times call for serious guests, the people with the experience that you want to hear from. It's not a talking head. It's not some, you know, Fox News guy or CNN guy or girl or whoever, right? It's Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar breaking down the continuing reality of what's going on in the U.S.-Iran war, which, as he has announced, as our president announced, is back on. So, Anthony, thank you for joining me here in the second segment. I'm supposed to have James Fish back on the next hour, although he might have gotten his schedule a little bit confused. Maybe we can do another segment because there's a lot to talk about, a lot to discuss. I want to start off with this because we were talking on the break about a lot of misinformation, disinformation about what's going on in the Strait, because we hear one thing. I play montages of Trump saying one thing. We play the Iranians saying something. What is the reality between who controls it? What does traffic look like? What's going on there?
So as we all know, the Strait of Hormuz, prior to the 28th of February, when the United States initiated this war, that there was a traffic scheme. There was a navigable traffic scheme that was agreed upon by international law, by all parties that used it. To go outside of that traffic scheme in any way, whether it's skirting around it to the north or skirting around it to the south, is by definition an act of piracy.
Right. You're
supposed to use the navigable channel. So what we saw in this latest round of pretense to the United States saying, well, we now started this war again because of Iran preventing vessels from using the Strait of Hormuz. The truth is that the United States was encouraging and involved in acts of piracy to force or to compel ships to use a route that is not part of the internationally approved maritime navigable channel. So basically what you have here, this is the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
You had pre-war traffic, this middle part.
Right.
You know, we know that the United States is now attempting to force ships to use this southern channel.
Right.
The problem with that southern channel is that it's not navigable in terms of it being surveyed for large vessel traffic. You can have traffic getting stuck.
You can dredge.
It's not an approved navigable route. It's like if I'm on a highway and there's a toll booth and I know that I've got to get from point A to point B, I have to use the toll booth. And so I decide to take a dirt road that I know that goes through private property, that I know that I can take down the fence and drive through it. I can use it illegally to get to the same point, but I did it under means of it's piracy. So when the United States is talking about, hey, ships A, B, and C, use this southern route, turn off your transponders, don't let Iran know you're doing it. We'll guide you with our satellite imagery. We'll kind of guide you through to make sure you don't, ground yourselves, but use this southern route. And there were some that said, oh, okay, we'll do that. Well, Iran located them, and Iran did exactly what the United States did when the United States had the distant blockade in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, to where when ships would pass through or get through the blockade, the United States was then firing upon those ships in disabling shots, Hellfire missiles to the engine room, to disable that vessel. The United States did it numerous times that also led to not only the disabling of vessels in the Strait of Hormuz, but also in two cases with an Indian maritime vessel and a Singapore vessel killed
three
maritime sailors.
Yes.
So Iran, looking at that, said, okay, Article 5, the Strait of Hormuz, over the next 30 days, Iran and the Sultanate of Oman would figure out what is the navigable channel? Well, they introduced that within hours. It didn't take days. It took within hours. They said, okay, here you go. We're going to use the northern coming in and out route, or excuse me, the southern coming in and out route of the pre-war traffic scheme, along with the going in route of the Iranian asserted traffic scheme, to where, and really when you look at it, it's Iran's way of saying, okay, we will meet the demand of Article 5 while maintaining our interests in leverage with this, to where this the route of traffic going out, that's primarily controlled by Oman in their territorial water. The traffic coming in is going to be basically under the control of Iran because it's within our territorial water.
Right.
However, both of those routes, though it's a combination of, were always part of the longstanding, historic, agreed upon, used traffic scheme of the Strait of Hormuz that has been part of international law and maritime traffic since the Strait of Hormuz has been used. So Iran wasn't violating anything in terms of normal use. They were just implementing a new traffic scheme, which is exactly what Article 5 stipulated. Iran was not imposing fees. There was discussion.
Right.
So when the United States then says, well, we don't like that, we're going to give, we're going to manipulate control.
Really quick, really quick. And I don't want to have this be like a fever dream thing, because President Trump says a new thing every 5 seconds is just outrageous. Didn't we say we wanted to charge fees or something like that?
Yes.
I mean, that's all I got.
The thing is that when people talk about the Strait of Hormuz and fees, there are 17 strategic waterways in the world between the Dardanelles, the Malaccas, the Strait of Malacca, the Suez Canal, the Panama Canal, the Strait of Gibraltar. All of those, every single one of them down to the last, has an administrative body. Some of them are unilateral, like the Suez Canal.
Oh, we got a statement. Sorry to interrupt. We got a statement. This comes from Michael Knowles. This is from 4 p.m. today, July 10th, 2026. Latest, senior U.S. officials say White House demands as the next step towards peace, a public statement, man, that all channels of the Strait of Hormuz are open and Iran will stop firing on ships. I want a 10 out of 10 model to come marry me. You know, that'd be really nice. I think that'd be cool for my future, but it's not going to happen. So, like, what do you think of that?
That is a That is already a proposal that is a demand that no one can meet, because what they're basically talking about is they want all the channels open. That's never been the case.
Right. Oh, that's so they're even
never.
They're trying to enforce their new world order. They're trying to enforce this new route. Wow. Now I'm making the connections here. It's layered. Go ahead.
So the United States is basically saying, by saying all the routes, well, all the routes were open. The United States is now saying by all the routes, by saying you must also implement the route that we, the United States, are now implementing with this Southern traffic separation scheme.
Right.
Which is not an approved route through the Strait of Hormuz.
Not only is it
international, by any international recognition or order.
Not only is it illegal, it's unsafe.
The United States saying do it.
Yeah, not only is it illegal, it's unsafe. It's uncharted. That's what
we're
hearing.
It's unsafe. It's illegal. It can lead to a disaster in the Strait of Hormuz. If you recall, a few years ago, we had a large vessel that, as it was attempting to navigate the Panama Canal, tilted a little bit,
yes,
got stuck, and it shut down the Panama Canal for days. That ended up being almost a global catastrophe.
I remember.
That's why we have these things. The navigable channel of the Strait of Hormuz has to be managed. Basically, the United States is coming in and saying, "We're on a highway, and we got you got your normal road. It's got some potholes. It makes you go around a little bit. Takes you a little bit longer. You can get on the toll road where you got to pay a little bit, but man, you can get there quick." And then you got the HOV lane, to where if you have more than one occupant, you can use the HOV lane. So basically what we're saying is we want that HOV lane to be used all the time by everybody now, no matter what. And the Department of Transportation, the DOT, is saying, well, that's not how that works. That's not what that's designed for. That's designed for we have a traffic scheme. We know that an X amount of traffic uses this, an X amount of traffic uses that, an X amount of traffic uses that. You can't open that to say that it's open like this one, because it doesn't meet that demand. Some of the very, very incredibly large container ships that we're talking about that move the world's oil,
yes,
cannot safely navigate that southern U.S. asserted traffic scheme. It's not a matter of who controls it. It's a matter of functionality. And now the United States is essentially saying, we want you to recognize our piracy on the high seas, and we want you to make it okay. And Iran and Oman are saying, no, it's not a good idea.
Right. What are other nations going to say to us doing this type of stuff, in the world's oceans? What do you think, Russia or China's response might be to something like this?
I think that any nation that has considerable traffic that moves through the Strait of Hormuz, which is nearly everyone,
right,
needs to look at this and say, no, that's the world needs to establish that Article 5 is met by the fact that the Strait of Hormuz has the incoming and outgoing navigable traffic scheme open. There is currently not an imposition of any fees yet. Could there be? Well, we haven't even gotten to that point of the discussion yet, because the technical talks that we were having in Qatar between representatives of Oman, representatives of Iran, representatives of Qatar, representatives of Pakistan as interlocutors, the U.S. negotiating team, Witkoff and Kushner, which is just basically sending Bibi Netanyahu to do negotiations.
Yes.
And then that of Iran. Was specifically to talk about that, and we blew that up. We flipped the table and said, nope, we want to do it our way.
Okay.
The United States must realize that this conflict will not come to an end with the United States trying to force its will upon the outcome. There will have to be negotiation.
We got even more of that, because we were talking on the break kind of as like a splinter or shotgun approach, how the U.S. is doing warfare. We were talking about the Kurds and the massive buildup of Kurdish forces. I want you to go into that, because here's the thing. We hear this buzzword from time to time. They get mentioned, maybe like Keith Kellogg says something insane on Fox News, or Trump references them, says they want to be paid or whatever. But what's really going on with the Kurdish population here?
So the Kurdish diaspora is worldwide. But it's concentrated diaspora in terms of its factions and fighters and primary political wings is really concentrated between Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And yes, there's some in Azerbaijan. Like I said, the diaspora is global.
Right.
But the concentration of where you see the primary of the Kurdish organization, the KCK, the Kurdish Communist Party, which is the global umbrella for the Kurdish, for basically the Kurdish movement, which there are some smaller factions, but that's kind of like the primary. You know, this here is kind of like that of what that of what all that looks like in the region. So specifically, right. We want to focus on kind of what's going on here between Iran and Iraq. So we know this is a matter of fact, not opinion, that there are clashes ongoing. There is active fighting right now between the PDKI, which is the Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan. Their fighters, they can bring about 3,000 armed fighters to bear. The PJAK, which is the Party of Free Life Kurdistan, it's another faction. And they do not agree, but they are each fighting Iran, the IRGC and the Iranian army in the West, being directly supported by the United States.
So that's already begun?
That's already happening. That's already happening. I think that the attack that we saw that happened on the 9th of July in Mashhad, it didn't make a lot of news. But in Mashhad, during the Ayatollah's funeral, there was what they're calling an extremist attack. I'm quite certain that was the Kurds under what's called the HRK. The HRK, or the Eastern Kurdish Defense Force, is their home turf is Mashhad. Mashhad has a very large Kurdish population of Kurdish extremists of the HRK, which is a violent armed wing of the Kurdistan Party of Iran within Iran that frequently fights with the Kurdish Hezbollah of Iran, which is in clashes constantly with the PJAK and the PDKI in the West and the Central. So part of those are backed directly by the United States, the faction that that was kicked out of Iran, that basically went over to Iraq and said, hey, can we kind of live under the PKK umbrella to kind of hide out for a little bit? The KGK, the Communist Communities Network, has a nice benign sounding name, but they're a fighting faction.
Right.
To say we're going to hide over here, but we're really this. But we're hiding here, kind of in exile. Well, the United States directly supports that organization up in Erbil, in Iraqi Kurdistan, where the United States has a very large footprint at the Erbil International Airport with special operations and Air Force. That's controlled by the Kurds.
Right.
So we are absolutely fueling, funneling, supporting this fight with the Kurds in Western Iran, and there's a buildup of U.S. forces and support to the Kurds in Iraq, which to me looks like a mobilization to go into Iran.
What is the goal with the staging and positioning of those forces and the logistical support that they get? Would they do operations that lead to, further like American push into a fight or area they've already started fighting? Are they going to go in there, with American troops? What does that look like from a civilian perspective? Those would be my questions.
So really, when you're looking at the ground plan here, we know that to try to go into Iran,
right,
on the ground from the west through the Zargos Mountains,
right,
is a horrible idea. But the Kurds in western Iraq, or excuse me, eastern Iraq and western Iran, the PJAK, the PDKI, the YRJK, and the HRK control that corridor from Iraq through the Zargos Mountains into Iran. Now, is it in contention with the IRGC and the Iranian military? It absolutely is. But they can get stuff through. That puts them on a corridor that can directly funnel forces and fighting into Tehran. So imagine, if you're the United States, if you want to draw forces away from the Strait of Hormuz so you can plan an operation to move in and take control of the Strait of Hormuz, you would want to open up a northern front to where Tehran would have to be worried about, are we going to have our capital attacked? So the United States is directly funneling forces. It's called A3E, Advise, Assist, Accompany, and Enable, Kurdish forces into Iran to draw forces from the south so the United States can then conduct an operation in the south, all while the United States can keep its hands clean and say, well, we don't technically have boots on the ground. We have advisors.
Right.
And that's exactly how our presence in Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq grew through the global war on terror. So it's basically just setting in the same old story for an escalation and U.S. forces in the region, potentially large scale on the ground.
So it's kind of the same thing where we have Israel cutting that corridor between Syria and Lebanon, right? So we're like a kind of a big monster that takes little bites, and that's kind of our way of warfare. Do you think that's a tactic that we've been kind of that we've been working towards for a long time, or is this more recent in the region with the Kurds? Have we been trying to get them to fight Iran for a while?
So this is not recent. However, I'm actually kind of shocked and surprised that the Kurds would ever pick up the phone when the U.S. calls after Syria, with the PKK taking the risk to go into Syria and changing their branding to become the Syrian Democratic Forces, knowing that Turkey, that would put them directly in the sights of Turkey.
Right.
And then we kind of left them hanging when Turkey said, hey, you've defeated ISIS. You don't need the Kurds anymore. We're going to handle the Kurds because they're a terrorist organization, just like ISIS is a terrorist organization. And the United States said, well, you know, we call the PKK a terrorist organization too. So sorry, Kurds, you know, I guess see on the flip side, get back to Iraq if you can. And now here we are again, picking up the phone and calling the Kurds. I'm shocked that they're picking up the phone. There must be something in it for them, right? So what would be in it for them? Well, for the larger umbrella of the KCK or the PKK or the regional diaspora, it is the consolidation of the Rojava. That's not going to happen in Turkey anytime soon. They can kind of already do it in Syria, but if they get the U.S. support to move in and consolidate that part of the Rojava in Iran, well, that's a huge win for the Kurds. And if they can do that, and the U.S. can use them to do that, well, that's something the Kurds might go for, especially if they destabilize the Iranian government to establish their own enclave of the Rojava in northwestern Iran. Well, that's a great deal for the Kurds. And it also is a great deal for Israel because it connects the Ben-Gurion corridor through Lebanon into Hebron, into Syria, into the Euphrates of Iraq, which is all part of Pax Judaica in the Greater Israel plan. So you see where all of these are coming together.
Yes, and they're actually, sounds like they're closer to their goal than I thought.
Absolutely.
I think that's the reality that people got to get through their heads, is this war's going good for somebody. It ain't us. It ain't us. Somebody's getting what they want out of the region. It ain't us. So what would you have to say to people that still think that we're sovereign and all of this, that we control, you know, what our military is going to do?
The United States government is no longer acting as a sovereign entity in world relations.
Yes.
We are absolutely controlled. We are there. There is no question that the United States is controlled by a foreign entity in our military, in our intelligence, in our Congress, in our executive branch. There's no question about that. That is no longer an argument.
That's right.
And the answer of who that foreign entity is, it is Israel.
Yep.
It's no longer a question. When you have a foreign nation being brought in by your own government, imagine if you're the host body and, you know, there's an infection and the body says, come on in, infection. What we've done. We've allowed the parasite to grow to where the parasite is now controlling our brain and telling us what to do.
Yep. Yeah, we've given up greater than 50% control. That's kind of how I put it, right?
That's right.
They've edged
up. The United States has given up more than 51, call it, maybe call it 50.5. You know, maybe we're not at that 51 yet, but for anyone to think that our military, our Congress, our laws, our domestic policies, our foreign policy, the deployment of our troops, the use of our Navy, our ethics and morals of bombing and killing schoolgirls in the name of war.
Right.
We are compromised and we are no longer acting as a sovereign nation in the world of nations.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to return to a time where we can do diplomacy again, respect international law again, have freedom again, not just for us, but for all the other people around the world. We need to be liberated because we're occupied. This is an occupied nation, and people have to realize the thing that you do to win, to get out of this, is share the information. Share this interview with people. This will be clipped up. Tell people about Anthony Aguilar. Tell people about the shows that we do. Tell them about AJN Network and other places where they can find real information. I mean, you're on Mario Newfall quite often. Tell them some of the places that you're on quite often.
So I do quite a bit of interviews almost daily with Mario Newfall, with Soleiman, who right now he was yes. in Iran. He's back in Lebanon right now, but I do updates with him almost daily. I'm also on George Galloway, mother of all talk yes. shows, British, with him quite a bit. Former parliamentary member of the British Parliament, very intelligent. And I'm on, I'm basically on your program quite a bit. I'm on other programs that are hosted that are basically the answer to the mainstream Fox News propaganda is platforms like yours and these others that are willing to get information directly to people to hear it without some filter or lens right. that's being paid for by a foreign influence entity yes. like Israel or any other for that matter. Absolutely. Israel is not the only one, but it is certainly the one that is now in control.
We want our freedom back, man. I think that's why you and me get along. That's what we care about. That's what we're passionate about. That's what the audience is passionate about as well. So share this interview when it comes out. Anthony, if you can do another 5 minutes with me, there are a couple other topics. I want to get some predictions, but then we're going to be back after the end of this break. I got a plug. My dad's going to run in here with the belt if I don't plug. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com and check out the apparel that we have. Check out the supplements that we have. Power Plant and Methyl Drive. I invented those. I formulated those. I've been formulating supplements since I was like 13 years old. I want you to go check out those products. You want cordyceps mushroom, you want golden root, Rhodiola rosea, zinc, boron, selenium, a lot. That's super good. Power Plant, Methyl Drive, the CoQ10, the PQQ. Of course, we're famous for our methylene blue, which we also have available. We've got the methylene red. We got it in capsules. And like I said, the finest American made, everything made in Arkansas. T-shirts, hats, belts, knives, combat equipment, you name it, we got it. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I'll see you after the break with Anthony Aguilar.
Example on InfoWars, one of his most famous statements was saying that tap water is turning the frogs gay and will turn you gay too. First off, gay people are awesome. I don't think that's a problem at all. And secondly, if you notice at the end of that video, he advertises water filters.
Now, you remember for decades I exposed how bad the water supply was, and they'd have David Hogg make fun of me and say it was a scam, and so what if the frogs are gay from the chemicals or trans or become hermaphroditic? Well, that's because their populations collapse and they go extinct, dummy.
He advertises water filters. Interesting.
It's the same thing with humans. Our fertility is being crushed. Our cancer rates are off the charts. And it's because of all the garbage in the food, all the garbage in the water, everything that's happening in our environment. And water is what 70% or more of our bodies are made of. It is so important to do this. It is a no-brainer. Go look at our third-party studies. Go look at our third-party testing. And then go out and try to find a comparable system for less money. Listen to this. Normal retail is $139. But for everybody, it's $97.99. That's 30% off. And for VIP, $69.99. That is a steal at that deal. So take your destiny in your hands. Don't let the globalists bomb you with these hundreds and hundreds, in some areas, thousands of chemicals. Don't let them bomb your children with it. Take action. Fund our information warfare operation against the globalists. Get healthier. Win-win. That is what it's all about. But you've got to take action. You've got to take control of your life. I am so proud of this bad boy. The AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead System. That's the housing. Just screws on in seconds. No plumbers. Beautiful box. Absolute high quality and a happy little straight frog that you look up at every morning, reminding you that you're not poisoning yourself, your wife, your husband, your children. Secure yours now while supplies last at thealexjonesstore.com.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.